before you get started?
Yeah, of course.
I looked in Divrei Hayamim.
Yeah.
It says nothing about Bat Sheva.
No, of course not.
It says nothing about Avshalom.
Right.
It says nothing about Adoniyahu.
Yeah. Oh, good evening. That's right.
It just sort of says,
right.
Next,
so,
Shlomo.
So if you're a Bible critic, then what you said is the job of Ezra was to whitewash everything away. Don't mention any sins.
Uh-huh.
Although that's not a good answer, because we're going to see there's a sin which isn't. There is a sin in Divrei Hayamim in Chronicles, which is very important to understanding this parsha,
uh-huh.
which is not whitewashed. The perspective is different. It's a priestly perspective, and they're interested in the building of the Beit HaMikdash, and that's really the focus.
Yeah,
We're in Kings 1. Does it have it?
Here we go.
Kings 1, chapter 1, verse 50. Kings 1, chapter 1, verse 50. We have a few extras. I guess I could lend this out until I need a Rashi, but maybe I won't use Rashi anyway, so
mm-hmm.
So good to go. And this bracelet's not going to help you, so I'll take that. There you go. The focus is on what does it mean to build the temple, and how do we get it up and running, and who should be working it, and the historical parts that are a focus are the ones that are of interest to a people of the Second Temple. For instance, all the Northern King stuff,
mm-hmm.
Elijah, Elisha, out, gone, not there. Doesn't mean they weren't aware of it. You could prove actually that that Ezra, who was writing Divrei Hayamim, had the Book of Kings right in front of him and used it as a source among other sources. But he was simply interested in a different purpose. The best way to describe it is it's not a history book, it's really a historiography. I'm going to choose how I want to write my history, and I'll include whatever facts I want. And the truth is, every history is a historiography. I could write a history about the fall of the dollar in the 1980s, and I'm not going to include, I may include things which seem completely unrelated to it, and I may not include other things which were related to it, but I, the historian, feels that this is the most important thing. For Ezra, who had a message from God to say, we need to talk about the temple so we can get it back up and running again, he chose the things that he felt were necessary to deliver that message, and he skipped anything that was not important. And Bat Sheva, well, it's very important to understand if you're a king and a prophet, it's relatively unimportant if you're a priest. It's just, you know, it's water under the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Did Ezra hold himself out as an objective historian? I mean,
he had
an agenda.
Yeah, I think that's. I always tell my students. I said everybody is subjective. It's just the brave ones have the guts to admit that they're subjective.
Right.
As opposed to study that they're objective. So yeah, absolutely right. It's not a history. It's he had a mission, and his mission, and he had to accomplish his mission, and whatever he chose was for that. Whatever did not help him accomplish his mission was simply out. So then there's some other interesting questions, like certain when you tell, you really have to wonder why did he choose that, not choose that, but that's a different topic altogether.
All right. So
yeah, it's a good question. It is a good question, and since we bring up Divrei Hayamim, it is important to know the difference between Divrei Hayamim and Malachim, because it just looks like, you know, same old, and it's not. So we're on verse 40. So let's read a few verses and get our bearing, and then we'll actually start to analyze exactly what's happening here. Malachim Aleph, Pasuk Nun. Oh, am I right? Malachim Aleph, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Nun. Second. 50, right? Nun 50. V'Adoniyahu yare mipnei Shlomo. Adoniyahu was afraid from Shlomo. Yare, by the way, is a standard verb, actually, in past tense, like zaken. Some verbs have it seire under the second letter. Normally, when we think of a past tense verb, so it's katav, halach, so it's kamat and a patach. But actually, there are some verbs called stative verbs which have the patach, which have a kamat and a zaken, and then a seire, such as zaken. Ani zaken doesn't mean I am old, it can mean I became old. So here, too, yare is just a standard past tense verb. It doesn't look like it, but it is. So he became fearful from Shlomo. Vayakam vayelech vayichazek b'karnot ha-mizbeach. So he goes to the altar, and he grabs onto the horns of the altar. Evidently, he's under the impression that will save his life. And the question that we're going to have to get to is, why would he make that assumption? Vayugam l'shlomo lemor. So it was told to Shlomo, he's afraid of the king Shlomo. And he's grabbing on. That's what he said. Yishavali kayoma melech Shlomo. I ain't moving from here. You're not going to get me off this mazbeach until I hear Shlomo swear to me. Im yamit et avdo becharev. Now, im is if, but not in swears. Im is low in swears. So whenever you see the word im in a swear, I swear im ani achalti et atavar hazeh means I did not eat this thing. And in fact, the other way works well. If you see im low, that means I will surely do it. I swear to Hashem lakachti et acherev, that means I will surely do it. So it's the opposite. Im means low. You can really think of it in terms of a swear. If I do this, then the negative part of the swear should fall on my head. That's the impression. I swear to God that if I go and do this, that I should be punished for it. And that's how you understand im. But the easiest way is simply translate im for low in this case. So, he says, I'm not getting off this mizbeach until Shlomo, King Shlomo, says he's not going to kill me. Pasuk nun bet. Vayomer Shlomo. Im yihye leven chayil. I'll tell you what the swear will be. If you'll be a ben chayil, we'll translate that in a second. Lo yipo misarat arza. Misarat arza. Arza. Not a single hair will fall, which means you'll be just fine. The imrahi matse bo. But if you find evil with him, vamet. He's dead. Eshlach HaMelech Shlomo, v'yaradu mi'al mizbeach. They sent a messenger. I guess they told him what he said. They took him down. V'yavo v'yishtachu l'melech Shlomo. V'yomer lo Shlomo lech v'teitecha. You go to your house. What a ben chayil is, which could be proven, actually we had the word Ben Chayil by Yonatan a little further up. Yonatan was the son of Eviatar. Ben Chayil is used in this part of Tanakh as loyal, which works here very nicely. If you'll be loyal to me, then you're fine. Which, by the way, is something that was hinted at by Adoniel himself. Because if you take a look and what Adoniel says back in Pasuk Nun Aleph, he says, in Pasuk Nun Aleph it says, "Vayugad Shlomo leMor." They told Shlomo, "Hinei Adoniyahu yarei et haMelech Shlomo, v'inachaz b'karnot haMizbeach leMor. Yishavali kayom haMelech Shlomo im yamit et avdo becharev," which means he refers to himself as the servant of the king. I think what he's doing is, you know, it's a little bit, it's a carrot stick. Like, I'm not getting down from here, and you can't touch me, but I want you to know that I'm your eved. So Shlomo goes, "Okay, prove it. If it's true and you're not lying to me, so you're fine. But if you don't prove it, you're dead." The implication here is that the Mizbeach saved his life. Or at least he had the assumption that the Mizbeach saves his life. But something very strange happens. Let's read on and see what else happens. In the end, Adoniyahu is going to die, and let's see how he goes about dying. See how he plots his own death, really. So let's go to Perek Bet, chapter 2. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Chapter 2, verse 13. Vayavo Adoniyahu ben Chagito bat Sheva im Shlomo. So Adoniyahu, the son of Chagi, comes to bat Sheva. By the way, what should immediately grab your attention is Adoniyahu ben Chagit. Mm-hmm. It immediately jumps off the page. Up until now, I've been calling Adoniyahu, Adoniyahu, Adoniyahu. So why all of a sudden Adoniyahu ben Chagit? Well, it sort of makes sense. It gives you an impression of what's going on. Because who is he going to? He's going to the mother of Shlomo. So what is the Pasuk mentioned? The Pasuk mentions his mother. It creates a sense that there's an equality in the brain going on that's being balanced. And that's a hint at what is really the problem, because otherwise it's going to be hard to say what the problem here is. So let's continue on. Vatomer ha-shalom bo'echa. Did you come in peace? So she's no dummy. She knows that Adoniyahu has a few tricks up his sleeve. Vayomer shalom. I come in peace.
Why would she believe him? I mean, it's really a silly question. If he says, no, I'm about to attack you. And
you know, it always seems to be like that in Tanakh. When people swore in God's name or they said, I'm doing something, the assumption was that they would. I don't know, maybe they're naive, but I guess the assumption is if somebody says shalom, that he really means it. There's an indication in Chazal that shalom is actually God's name, so you have to be careful about saying shalom alecha, alechem shalom. But you're right, sometimes people in Tanakh seem a little naive. But I guess the idea is that there's a promise to be kept. I like to say something to you. So go ahead and talk, she says. You, the queen mom, knew. was really a chutzpah thing to say, by the way. You could see it coming. The kingship was really mine. Everybody was looking at me to be a king. And then the melucha turned, the kingship turned. But he went to my brother. Because God wants him to have it. It's very kind of both, like I have my cake and eat it too. You know, I'm playing both hands. On one hand, you know, really Bathsheba, everybody knows that I was the king first. On the other hand, I do admit that God wants him to have it. So of course, I'm a good upstanding citizen. Zata, now, Sheila Chata Nochi Shoel Nimta. I only have one question for you. Alta Shivi Panai, don't turn away my, please don't say no. Vatome Elav Daber, so she says, keep talking. Vayomer, Imri Na L'Shlomo, please go talk to Shlomo, Hamelech. Ki Lo Yashivit Panayich, he won't turn you away because he loves you, whatever it is. I inserted that myself. Or he's your mother, we'll see why. Vayitain Li Yit Avishaga Shunamit Lisha. All I want is one little thing. I want Avishag the Shunammite. That was the beautiful woman that they found to warm up David, who David refused to sleep with. All I wanted is a wife. But Tomer Bathsheba, I know, it seems very confusing. I'll tie it all together soon. Right now, I just want to read as the text shows it, and then I'll show you a little historical background, a textual background, and the whole plot will come and fit in beautifully. You'll see just how evil Adoniyahu really is. Vatomer Bathsheba Tov. Oh, okay, that's all you want, a girl? I could do that for you. Anochi Adaber Alecha Alamel. I'll speak for your sake to the king. Vatavo Bathsheba Amelech Shlomo Vadaber Adoniyahu Vayakam Amelech Lekrata. The king got up to visit her, which is very important. We'll get back to it. Vayishtachulai, bow down to Reyeshev al Kiso, Vayasim Kisei Le'im Amelech. He took a seat and gave it to his mother. It just sounds like he's being polite, but I assure you there's all kinds of things going on here. The Torah does it. You never have something where it says, and Moshe's about to come to the mountain, and he tied his shoelaces. And after he tied his shoelaces, it wouldn't trip. They come down from the mountain. You never have, like, extraneous material. You know, it's nice and Shlomo, unless I guess the point of it is wants to show what a good son Shlomo is. Something's weird about this Kisei. Oh, and, you know, her feet were hurting, and she said, I really like to get off my feet. So Shlomo got her a seat. Seems very, another non sequitur. One non sequitur after another non sequitur. But we'll tie it all together. Vayasim kisei leim amelech, vateshav limino. Vatome sheila chaktani anochi shoaladita. I have one little question. Al tashav upanai. Don't turn me away. Vayomel amelech shalimi. Go ask my mother. Kilo ashiv et panach. I'll never say no to you. Vatomer yutan et avishaga shunamit la doniyahu achichalisha. Let doniyahu have the woman. He says to his mother, "Why are you asking for Avishag, the Shunamit, for Adoniyahu? The Shali lo hamucha. You might as well ask for the kingship. Ki hu achi agadol mimei. Don't you understand that he's my older brother? The lo uleev yatar kohen uleyoav ben tria. He's got the kohen. He's got a general. You're asking him for a woman." So now it seems like a non sequitur. What's the big deal? A woman. No, I'm just saying, I mean, why? No, I didn't mean in that sense. I keep doing that. I mean, why would that indicate that he wants the melucha?
Because of what happened with Absalom before. Because Absalom,
Exactly right. It's not so simple to sleep with the wife of the royalty, and that's exactly the point we're going to get to. But I like to prove it step by step. Not only from that was going to be my surprise. But okay, we'll go to that first, and then we'll go to that. No, it's perfectly fine. Now I want to skip the whole plot. Let's just take Shlomo at his word that Adoniyahu was really plotting, and we'll figure out whether there really is a plot. Adoniyahu knows he's in trouble. Why? Because Chaf Gimel. Now you got to swear by Yishevat Melech Shlomo. It's kind of ironic. Now Shlomo starts to swear about Adoniyahu. We're in chapter 2, verse 23. Ba'Hashem Lemor, Ko Yaseh Li Elohim B'Chol Yosef. So should God say to do to me, and so should he continue to do to me. Ki B'Nafsho Diber Adoniyahu Et Adavar Zeh. He took his own life into his hands when he said this thing. Adoniyahu forfeited his life. V'Atai Chai Hashem Asher Echinani. I swear to God, on God's life, so to speak, that God who put me on the seat, v'yoshivani al kisei David avi, v'asher asali bayit kasher diber, and he gave me a house. In this case, the house means dynasty. Ki hayom yumant Adoniyahu. Today Adoniyahu is dead. Won't make it to the evening. V'yishlach ha-melech Shlomo biyad Yad Benayahu ben Yoyada, that's his general, Vayifka bo Vayamot. The first question is, that you've got to ask is, the last time, this is not the first time that Adoniyahu has been in a life jeopardy situation, it's the second time. The first time, what did he do? He ran away to the Mizbeach, and he begged on the Mizbeach, he said, I'm not getting down from here unless you swear to me, you're not going to kill me. And Shlomo says, okay. Why didn't he do it again? Why did he run again? What's the proof, by the way, or what's almost the proof, but it's weird, Yoav is going to be killed, and what does he do?
He runs
away to the Mizbeach. But guess what? It doesn't save him. Let's take a look there. Verse 28. Chafchet. Vashmoah ba'ad Yoav. Yoav heard what the rumor, which obviously was that he's the next one down. Ki Yoav na'ata tachrei Adoniyahu. The rumor was that Yoav was supporting Adoniyahu. Now, I don't know, strangely, that's not a rumor. He was clearly after Adoniyahu. So what does that mean? V'acharei Avshalom lo natav, but he didn't go after Avshalom. V'yanas Yoav alo Adonai echazek b'chanot mizbeach. So he put his hands into the mizbeach. He's pulling Adoniyahu. He figures the mizbeach will save him. V'yugad l'melech Shlomo kinas Yoav alo Hashem v'nei yitzal mizbeach v'yishlach Shlomo v'nayal ben Yodah l'mor l'chap l'ch pagabo. Go to the altar and strike him down right there. On the altar of Hashem, he's dead. Kill him. Which means the altar is not doing anything. Say, he wants you to come out of there. No way, I'm not moving. I'm on home base. You can't even get me out of here. Kipo amut, this is where I'll die. That's what he said. So obviously Benayahu is not sure what to do. He figures maybe I shouldn't kill him on the Mizbeach. So he says, nope, do exactly what I told you to do. Ukvarto, you bury him, vasiroti dmei chinam, etc., etc. And that's what happens. They go and they kill him. So the first question, it's a series of questions. One is, Adoniyahu is in deathly trouble. He thinks he's going to be killed by the king. He runs away to the Mizbeach to be saved. He clearly has some expectation. And in fact, Shlomo can't touch him. So it seems not to be able to touch him. Then Adoniyahu is really a dead man. So he figured he'd run away to the Mizbeach. And you can't say because the Mizbeach was under construction, because Yoav runs away there. But then you have another question. Yoav clearly had the expectation that he wouldn't be killed there, otherwise he wouldn't have run there. And yet Shlomo says kill him there. So is it legal to kill somebody at the Mizbeach? If it is legal to kill in the Mizbeach, why would Yoav run there, and why would Adoniyahu run there? And why would Adoniyahu not run back there? If it's legal. And if it's illegal to kill someone in the Mizbeach, how dare Shlomo kill Yoav on the Mizbeach? And then why didn't Adoniyahu run back to the Mizbeach after the whole incident with the Kilayas? Either way, whether it's legal, illegal, things are not working out as planned. So, here we need to go into a little bit of Torah Shebaal Peh and learn a little bit about the Mizbeach and what it does. If I could quickly find it, I'll get it. I didn't bring the source. Here it is. Rotzeach u'shmirat. You find the Shulchan Aruch, I'm going to the Rambam, it's a little bit clearer. This is the Rambam, Hilchot Rotzeach Ushmirat Nefesh. Kol HaHoreg Bishgaga. Anybody who kills by accident, of course you all know what happens to a person who kills accidentally, assuming that it was a preventable accident, not a complete and total, an accident. What happens to a person who kills by accident? Where does it go? Go Adam, if you can chase him down, fine, but if you can't chase him down, he's got a sanctuary. What if he can't get to the Ir Miklat? This is what he could do.
They catch him, he gets killed.
But he has another sanctuary. You can probably guess where I'm going with this, right? Mm-hmm. Let me find it. Yeah, exactly right. Hold on a second. Where is it? I'm sorry. I prefer to read it to you, but if I can't find it, I'll just... Oh, Hamizbeach Kolet. The Mizbeach is a sanctuary. Shenemor Bahorek Bezadon, because it says in the Torah by somebody who kills on purpose, Me'im Mizbechi Tikachenu Lamud, take him away from a Mizbeach to kill him. Michlal, what do I learn from this? That's only when you kill on purpose. But if you kill by accident, Bishkaga Eino Neharag Mizbeach, you don't kill a guy with Mizbeach. If he manages to get to the Mizbeach, it's like kids playing tag. It's home base, can't touch him once he gets to the Mizbeach. The Fichach Ahorek Bishkaga, so somebody killed by accident, Uklato Mizbeach, and he managed to reach the Mizbeach first. And by the way, if you're doing a Yerushalayim, you're better chances to make it. You're not going to make the Hebron go to the Mizbeach. The only problem is if you're at the Mizbeach, what are you going to do? Now where are you going to go? Because if you're the Goel Adam, you just exactly. So I guess you wait for the Goel Adam to go to sleep or something. So we'll see how long you stay there. The Goel Adam is not allowed to touch him. Goel Adam is not allowed to touch him.
Could a Goel Adam appoint somebody else to...
No, I don't think so. What do you do if he gets there? What you have to do is appoint somebody to take him. If you get there, it's like a free channel. It's like a teleportation. If you get to the Mizbeach, then what you do is you get somebody to come around, and he escorts you to the Ir Miklat, and the Goel Adam can't touch you. You follow? So you don't have to stay in the shaft forever.
Call it electricity.
Right, it's like a current that...
When we played the game.
Exactly right. So it says, anybody who got to safely to the sanctuary of the Mizbeach, obviously he doesn't stay there forever. You appoint him guards, and you take him escorted out to the Mizbeach. But when do these words apply? That's when you have galut. Aval mi shepachad min hamelech shelo yahargenu b'din malchut, omi beit din shelo yahargenu b'horat shah uvarach mizeach v'nismach lo v'afilu hayezar harizenitza. So first of all, you should know, I skipped a little bit. The only time that if you kill accidentally, the mizeach works for you is only if you're a kohen, and only if you have a sacrifice in your hands. It's a very, very limited thing, and it doesn't apply to Adoniyahu.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. And it doesn't apply to... Hi, good evening. It doesn't apply to Adoniyahu, and it wouldn't apply to Adoniyahu to Yoav, because they're not Kohanim. And not only that, it only applies to somebody killed by accident. But somebody who goes against the king or a Hora'at Shah, him you take to the Mizbeach. If he gets to the Mizbeach, then you're not allowed to take him down there forever. But now you got a problem, because what's the problem? The Beit Din has a Hora'at Shah. You are wearing blue pants on a Thursday, you're dead. That's a Hora'at Shah. Hora'at Shah is a law, not a law that is given by the Torah, but a martial law. I have to institute that anybody out of their curfew by past 9 o'clock is dead. Same thing applies to B'din Malchut. B'din Malchut does not mean B'din Torah. It means B'din Malchut, because the Melech could kill you for anything. A Melech has that right. A Melech could say, I don't like your hair, you're dead. What's the check for that? The check for that is that you have a place to run, which is the Mizbeach. And anybody can run to the Mizbeach. Now, by Galut, when God forbid somebody kills accidentally, has to run away to the Miklat, then all he has to do is get to the Mizbeach, if he's a Kohen, and then we take him over to the Galut. But this guy who's wearing blue pants on Thursday when the king told him not to, he's dead. So the question is, how long is he going to stay up there? They don't have toilets on the... they don't have toilets up on the Mizbeach. How long can he stay up there? What's the chaf, though? The chaf is that you're praying, since it's only a Hora'at Shah, you're hoping that you'll be able to stay up there long enough until... What are you hoping will change? Changes in mind. You follow what I'm saying? These dinim are specifically king's dinim. They're not legislated by God's law. They didn't kill anybody. They didn't do anything against the Torah no death penalty laws. They annoyed the king for whatever it was. And the king decided, for whatever reason he decided, he's allowed to decide. Or if Beit Din decides this person has to die, he's allowed... What's the only thing that protects him? The only thing that protects him is he's allowed to jump to the Mizbeach. And there he stays until hopefully the king changes his mind. And then it's a waiting game. And that's why Nikon said what Adoniyahu was saying. He said, I'm not getting out of here until you promise to me that I'm okay. Because Adoniyahu didn't do anything wrong. Don't forget, Adoniyahu wasn't Morid B'Malchut when he took the kingship. Why wasn't he... Why? When I say Morid B'Malchut is a dindi raita. You can't plot against the king. Because the Torah, that's something that you die for. That's a God law.
Was that what he was doing against David?
Why? But no, because David hadn't made the decision. And you can't say he was Morid B'Malchut against Shlomo. Why can't you say he was Morid B'Malchut against Shlomo? So it wasn't the king yet. And not only that, Adoniyahu was the oldest son.
But David was the king. And Adoniyahu declared himself king.
That's true, but that was before David. Remember, it said David didn't tell him one way or the other.
But
it wasn't until
David
after...
David was still king.
Yeah, but we've learned that there's no problem with having two kings at the same time.
Well, it may have been rude.
What's that?
It may have been rude,
but I don't think that's... He never said, I'm killing David. He's saying David is non-commutative. My dad is out to lunch, so to speak. and therefore we need somebody to rule the country. I'm taking over. Yeah, that's not more Mauri Malchus. I'm going to kill the king, and I'm going to he's retired.
David ready to retire,
but he didn't.
Correct, but again, I don't think that there's. I don't think that's our sense. When you're Mauri Malchus, when you lead a rebellion against the king, you really have to plot to kill the king. You have to plot to go against what really to overthrow the government. That's not really what's going on. He's just saying the government's really finished. That's his decision. It's a legal decision. I think it stands up to court of law. So he's not really Mauri against David. He's certainly not Mauri against Shlomo, which means his crime is not Mauri b'Malchut. It's his fear that now Shlomo is, and Shlomo, by the way, doesn't have a right to kill him because he didn't transgress any death penalty laws, but Shlomo does have the right to kill him because he may reasonably fear that Shlomo thinks that he's a threat. He's an older brother. He's caused all kinds of problems. He pretends he's Absalom. And therefore, he probably did have a very reasonable assumption that Shlomo would want to kill him. But that's a decision that the king makes and has the right to make. But you have the right to wait it out of his death. You see what's going on here? What's that? So the question is, what Yoav clearly thought that whatever he was guilty of, let's take a look. You know what? I was going to go first to the second time when Adoniel doesn't run from his bath, but let's jump over to Yoav in the meantime for a second. It says why Yoav felt he had to be killed. In Pasuk 28, in verse Chavchad, it says, Vashma ba Yoav ki Yoav nata achare Adoniel. He supported Adoniahu's bid for king. V'acharei Avshalom lo natan, yet he never ever went to Avshalom. Avshalom was a real, real rebellion. He's going to say Avshalom wanted to kill the king, no doubt about it, his father. Adoniyahu didn't want to do such a thing. So what does that mean? Why is it specified that it was only against Adoniyahu that he supported and not Avshalom? So I can say, listen, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not a rebellious man. I supported the wrong guy. And I have no doubt that Shlomo don't like me and David never liked me, and I have no doubt that a word's going to come down to the king's side that I've got to die. What am I going to do? I have an out. Go to Mizbeach. Then the question is, Shlomo obviously feels that Adoniyahu is wrong. Yoav, in his mind, runs away to Mizbeach because he feels he's not married by Malchut. He goes against the din of the king or the din of Ahorav Shav. That's not considered a full-scale rebellion. Shlomo, in order to kill him, has to prove what? What does Shlomo have to do in order to kill him on Mizbeach? Prove that he's a murderer. Yeah. He has to prove that he's proved that he's over a Torah death penalty law. But let's figure out what Yoav did afterwards. I want to put Yoav aside for right now and get back to Adoniyahu. Adoniyahu clearly does not feel that he has any chance in Mizbeach, because if he would have just thought that it was Shlomo's personal beef against him, he would have run right to the Mizbeach and seen whether he could get away with it. He feels that based on what Shlomo's decided, that he is dead and there's nothing that he could do about it, which he believes that it's a direct rebellion against the king. Shlomo believes it, and Shlomo could win the court case. So now let's see exactly what Adoniyahu did and see whether, in fact, it's correct. So, first of all, the question is, what did he ask for? He asked for a Pilagesh. You think it's just all about the girls. It's all about the girls. But as David correctly noticed, taking a king's Pilagesh, and the truth is, there was Indian kings, like the Persian kings that used to die, all their wives went with them, right? There's actually an extreme case. Mesopotamia usually did not do such things. Nobody could ever touch the king's wife or the king's concubines. No way. But they didn't take him with them. There was one king who was a child of the famous Sargon the Great of 2300 BCE. He had a son named Naram-Sin, who was a great king, by the way. In fact, he had a code of laws much like Hammurabi, and it was probably the earliest code of laws he had. He was a very powerful king, maybe even more powerful than Sargon. And he felt he was a god, because in his scriptures to himself, there's a little cuneiform symbol, a chiseled symbol, which you only put in front of God's names, and this guy, Naram-Sin, had it in front of his name as well. But they also discovered something quite gruesome. When they dug up his grave some 100 years ago in Iraq, they found 60 people with him who did not die of old age. All of his servants, all of his wives, all of his direct followers went into the crypt with him and died on the day that they sealed him up. That usually did not happen in Mesopotamia, but you get a sense of what's going on. But in many, many societies, you don't touch the wife of the king. And if you touch the wife or the Pilegus of the king, you're essentially making a statement. If only the king could touch the Pilegus of the king, what are you saying, essentially? Okay. Now, let me prove that to you textually. The first person to take a Pilegus in the Torah was... anybody? This is what to sleep with a Pilegesh. Oh, one of Jacob's sons. Excellent. Reuven. So let's take a look there in Perek Lamed Hey. So if you have a full Tanakh, I would suggest open up to Bereishit Lamed Hey, Genesis 35. And the Torah says something very strange, which the Mefarshim really go bananas about. This is where he sins. Lamed Hey, the last verse of Lamed Hey, 35, Genesis 35. I think it's the last verse.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm wrong. Is it the first verse? I'm sure it's in 35.
35, what's
that? Okay. I think it's 35. Just a second.
It's
22. Yeah, verse 22. Verse 22.
Huh?
It's chapter 35, verse 22. Vayihi b'shchon Yisrael be'eretz ahi. This was after his mother died. This was after Yosef and Binyamin's mother died. Rachel dies. Vayelech Reuven vayishka v'tzilha pileg yeshaviv. There are all kinds of weird things going on. First of all, how is it possible that he sleeps with sleeping with Bilhah? In fact, many of them before should, based on Chazal, water it down. It's not that he slept with her. He moved the bed of Bilhah, who was his... he moved the bed of Bilhah out of his father's tent, and he moved his mother Leah's bed in. Because Mimele, he could live with the fact that Yaakov is sleeping on a regular basis with Rachel. But after Rachel dies, so Yaakov, according to Chazal, takes up with Bilhah, the handmaiden of Rachel. That was too much for Reuven, and therefore he switches a bed. But oh my goodness, that's bad thing to do, but that's a terrible sin. And you should know something. I'll tell you, we never hear the repercussions of this sin. The repercussions can only be found in Divrei Hayamim. So if you happen to have it, don't lose your place here, because this is pretty important. But I'll just, you don't even have to go there. I'll just read to you Divrei Hayamim Aleph Perek Hey. It's a shocker what Ezra says. And probably Ezra's basing it on Nevuah or earlier information. Chapter 5, verse 1. Uvnei Reuven, Bechor Yisrael. He was the Bechor of Israel. I'm not sure how to translate that. Kihua Bechor. You should know something. He was the Bechor. Ubechalalo Yitzuei Aviv. And he was messed around with his father's bed. Nitna Bechorato Livnei Yosef. He lost the Bechorah, which is the Kuna. The Kuna, or whatever it was that went along with the Bechor, got ripped away from him and given to Yosef. That's why Yosef's two sons wound up with two lots of property versus Reuben, which only got one. That's a punishment. That's a good punishment, what he did. So, of course, Chazal say that he didn't actually sleep with him, but many of the Mefarshim simply said, yes, he did. But the real question is, why is Bilhah called Pilegesh? Bilhah's never called Pilegesh. It says Yaakov married Bilhah. And in fact, it says Isha, when it refers to Bilhah everywhere else, it uses the word Isha, not Pilegesh. This is the only case where Bilhah is mentioned as a Pilegesh. And the reason is, very simple, because he wasn't doing it for sexual reasons. He was doing it to make a statement. Because if Reuven, don't forget who was the favorite son of Yaakov, Joseph, especially with poor Rachel dying, so the focus stays even more so on the Rachel side of the family. So Reuven says, I'm losing it here. I'm not going to get my job as chief. So what am I going to do? I'm going to go sleep with the Pilegesh, and that'll give me the kingship. I don't want to take time to read the Radak, but the Radak has the whole thing beautifully. Now, if I only had that proof, that wouldn't be enough. But there's another one. In Shmuel Bet, Perek Gimel, chapter 3, there's another Pilegesh incident. What happens is Yonatan and Shaul dies, and the kingdom sort of splits. David controls Yehuda, and a guy named Ish-Bosheth, the last remaining son of Shaul, takes over the northern king. But he's a really weak, weak king. The only guy supporting him is Avner. Avner was the chief, the general of the army. What does Avner do in Shmuel Bet chapter 3? Verse 7, if I'm not mistaken. Verse 6. Vayihi biyota milchama ben Beit Shaul ben Beit David v'Avner haya mitchazek b'Beit Shaul. Avner was the only one keeping the whole family of Shaul together. Ula Shaul Pilegesh. He had a Pilegesh. Ushma Ritzba Batayan. Her name was Ritzba Batayan. Vayomer Avner. Why did you sleep with the plagues of my wife? Why did you sleep with the plagues of my father? Obviously, Ish-Bosheth couldn't care less about the sexual implication. What is he really worried about? that Avner is making a statement. What's the statement? I'm in charge anyway. And by the way, he's probably right. This is exactly what Avner was doing. I'm in charge anyway. Got the whole army. He's boasted it's nothing. If I sleep, if I take the Pilegesh, and here it's used specifically Pilegesh, I'm the king. And then Vayichal Avner Ma'od, Al-Divreish Boset, Vayomah Harosh Kelav Anochi, what do you think, I'm the head of a dog? Asher Liuda, Yomah Asech Chesli, and Beit Shaul Avicha, he leaves him alone. That's it, I'm out of here. I see, I have no, I don't want anything to do with you, I'm out of here. But the truth is, Avner is a little bit duplicitous. I sleep with the Pilegesh of the king, Avner was making a statement. Each Boset was no idiot, he was weak, but he was no idiot. He said, what do you think you're doing? I'm in charge here. He says, you think you're in charge here? I'm switching teams. I quit. I'm working for the other company. If I don't have a chance to become the king here, goodbye, good luck. The final proof, of course, is the one that David mentioned. What was the big deal? Achitofel himself, in Perek Tet Zayin, and read it inside because we'll definitely run out of time. Achitofel himself says, I want you, the first, Achitofel was the guy who gave Avshalom all the advice. He was the guy from Gilo who gave all the advice. And Achitofel, it says in the Navi that Achitofel's advice was almost like Nivuah. People considered him like a Navi. His advice was so spot on. So Avshalom says, what's the first thing I should do as a king? He says, take the Pilag Shim and sleep with them, Leinei Hashemesh. Make sure everybody sees you sleeping with the king's wife. If you put all these things together, it becomes quite clear what sleeping with the king's wife is. Sleeping with the king's wife, or the king's Pilagesh, is a statement that I deserve to be the king. And that's hidden in all of his texts. Now, why get Bathsheba involved? What's the whole thing with Bathsheba? And as I mentioned before, as you heard me say before, Bathsheba was the queen mum. And that's the thing with the seat. Her seat was right next to Shlomo's seat. Not only that, when the queen mum came in the room, Shlomo gets up off of his seat, and the Shtachavu Artsa, he bows down on the ground. Which means, theoretically, Shlomo's not playing games here. He doesn't just give her a kiss hello. The king gets up, and everybody sees it. He bows down on the ground, and he says he takes her seat and puts her seat right next to his seat. What does he say? What's the statement being made? Shlomo knows politics. She is theoretically the most powerful person in the kingdom. If the king bows down to the queen mum, she's the most powerful person in the kingdom. Now, practically, it wasn't. It wasn't like that. The queen mum was not the most powerful person. The king was. The queen mum was the second most powerful person. We had it with Yisrael. You have this, all kinds of cases like this that takes place. Why generally was the queen mum the most powerful person in the kingdom? Because the queen mum was in charge of the harem. Huh? All of the pilagshim, she was in charge of. She raised every single child, which means very often she decided who made it. If you get my drift, mm-hmm. To who survived. The oldest person also became the oldest boy always became the king as a general rule. But who's to say which one would be the oldest? Do you see what I'm saying? The harem was completely controlled. This is this is well known Mesopotamian. This is Mesopotamian law, Near East law. The queen and mom was in charge. She, the king, couldn't care less. The king slept with the Pilagshim, and by the way, Shlomo had 1,000 of them, and many kings had many of them. They slept with them. They had kids, and then Shlomo said, who's coming up? The queen mom is in charge of the training and the raising of the kings, and that's a tremendously powerful position, if you think about it, really. Tremendously powerful. But at least symbolically, not only practically, but symbolically, the king is saying she's in charge. Which means if the queen, so why does Adoniyahu go over to her? Because Adoniyahu, if Adoniyahu just does it on his own, it means nothing. But if the queen mom decides that I'm supposed to sleep with the wife of the king, and by the way, of course, what happens next? And I have a child. That child then is a child of the queen of the former king, which means he's directly in line for rule. He could be the oldest, and he's certainly in direct line. He's David's direct grandson, as much as Shlomo's direct grandson in that sense. Right? He's related on the mother's side, so to speak, to the queen of the king. All right, now you sort of have to put it together, but essentially, he becomes sort of a direct line. If I marry the wife, think of it like Yibum. Think of it like Yibum. The brother dies, other brother takes over, the child they have gets named sort of after, it becomes like a living fossil of a living memory of the older brother. Here too, I take the wife of the king and I have a child, then theoretically that's the child of the king in a sort of a Yibum type of situation. So Shlomo's on for the whole thing. Now, Bathsheba.
Well,
oh, because, what's that? I don't think she's naive, but keep in mind, there's never been a queen mum before.
She'd already done so much to get Shlomo to be in charge, and she surely knew about the power. I don't see why she'd give up his position now after she'd worked so hard to get him, the Malchut.
I'm sorry, you wanted to say something?
Well, the other way of looking at it, she's playing the game, because she just relayed the message. She must have known that how Shlomo was going to react.
Oh, you mean she's really just playing him anyway?
Yeah.
I mean, you could say that.
Otherwise, you could say if she was supporting Adoniah, then she'd say, look, I can't go and tell him, or it'll be a problem, or he'll oppose.
So you think it's a setup?
It's a setup.
It's possible. I want to give. It's certainly a possibility. It doesn't sound from her language. It's like, please don't turn me away. It's a very begging language. So unless she's a real good player, and it's possible she's a real good player. I want to go with the other possibility, though, that, and here's where it's another one of those little facts that gets thrown into the Torah. What did Shlomo have to do after he bowed down to her? What was the next thing he did? He went and got her a what?
A
throne seat. What that means is that Shlomo essentially before, which means that a minute before, there was no throne seat. But there's always supposed to be a throne seat. There's supposed to be the king and the queen mum. Which means up to this time, nobody really knows. It's not... Are we playing this game of the queen mum, or we're not playing this game? Do we do this? Do we not do this? Keep in mind that this is the first time that a father has passed on kingship to a son, which means it's the first time that there is a queen mum. So I'm not comfortable with the naive. I'm not entirely comfortable with the setup, although it's certainly nice and it gives a little extra credo to the Vashava. But I don't think I'm not that comfortable with the language. But I think they could argue that, listen, politics is a new game. You know, it's like the first time you take a job, you're in the EO. You don't know exactly what's going on. So she knows, she's the mother of the king, but what does it mean? The question is, how did Shlomo know then? Shlomo was Shlomo, you know. The reason Shlomo was a genius. He knew, he was aware of things. He really wasn't a babe in the woods. He was aware of what was going on. It's true, but he hasn't asked for the Chachman yet, but we'll see what that's about later. But I don't think that God was building, giving him Chachman on top, and I don't think Shlomo was like an idiot. And then all of a sudden he became a Chacham. Maybe he was a Chacham, he made a super Chacham. So my reading of, and certainly not, it's possible not the only reading, my reading is that Adoniah was playing politics that he's familiar with, that Bathsheba is not so familiar with, and then Shlomo saying, listen, Mom, Queen Mom, you missed the boat on this. When you ask for the kingship, that's not just some nice lady asking for the kingship. You can't be naive. That's the Queen Mom asking for it. And essentially what he's doing is he's playing you in order to get the kingship. And that's why he's saying, I used to be the king, and now I'm not the king. That's the whole play, and that's why I got up. All those non sequiturs are all about, I think, trying to make a point that if I marry the Queen's Pelegesh, I'm the guy. Shlomo is not to be fooled, and he knows therefore that that is a direct rebellion against the king. If you say I want to be the king and there's no standing king, that's not a direct rebellion, that's a horat shah. You can run away from his back. If there is a king and you say I want to be the king, that's rebellion. You know, there's no other way about it, and therefore he doesn't even run to the mizbeach. Shlomo, he's not going to survive a court of Shlomo, and probably he's not right in the end. He really is trying to lead a rebellion. He's really quite a slime, to be perfectly honest. Now,
well, what way that is that to make a rebellion? I mean, if he, unless he's really naive, because he knows he's going to be killed. I mean, if he goes and asks Bathsheba to go and,
I think he's hoping Shlomo doesn't get it. Shlomo's a younger brother, much younger. I think he's hoping that Shlomo's an idiot, that Shlomo's a puppet. I think he thinks, well, maybe Shlomo's players, his handlers know what's going on, but Shlomo's just a little boy who doesn't know what's going on. I think that was his hope. Mm-hmm. That was his hope. Again, that's the best answer I can give you.
Or maybe he would know, or maybe he would be concerned there would be a way of, like, just, bobbing him up, saying, take this, leave me alone.
Yeah, that's right. Whenever you involve a girl, she could always say it was, and by the way, many Mephorshim, the Malbim just says, oh, he was so excited about the, Himan is the prettiest woman in the country. So I think maybe he was hoping that Shlomo would just figure, the truth is it's not a bad tactic. Shlomo would just figure it's all about the girl and miss the political implication. But Shlomo was not, he didn't take his eye off the ball for a minute. Now, we have about 10 minutes, so we have 10. Excellent question, we're not going to get to it. Not as young, most people would put him in his teens, but I think he was a little older than that. We'll see how, we'll see later on. I want to leave it for later. We'll find out that we'll be able to more or less age Shlomo, to figure out how Shlomo is, by when his son takes over and what age his son takes over. We'll be able to give a date range. I don't think he's as young as most people suspect. My guess is early 20s. That's my thinking. But I'll hopefully be able to prove that at a later time. Yoav. David can never kill Yoav. He never could get him. And there's a Gemara that I wanted to read you.
Why not?
Oh, that's a good question, and that's what the Gemara goes into. The Gemara, let me quickly.
Noah was very powerful.
He was very powerful. So on one hand, you could argue that
also
David had no right to
a lot of chesed for David.
But then the question is: so why was he more powerful than David, but less that powerful than Shlomo? Why is Shlomo more powerful than David?
But David owed him because Yoav even though some of his techniques weren't so ay-ay-ay,
yeah.
Basically Yoav put him in power.
Yeah, that's true. See, Yoav is a very great character, and I want to, very black, it's not black and white. In fact, I want to read your Gemara, where Chazal themselves are struggling with how to make out Yoav. And by the way, just to give you the willies, what do we say at the end of we said it at the end of Pekudei. What do we say? Chazak, chazak, v'nit chazek. You know who says that first in the Torah? Yoav. When you say chazak, chazak, v'nit chazek, you're quoting Yoav. You should know something. So Chazal obviously felt enough about him that they wanted it. What did you say? Chazak, chazak, v'nit chazek, b'shem Hashem Elokeinu. Yoav says that himself. When he was taking the city of Ammon, and he says, all you soldiers, chazak, v'nit chazek, b'shem Hashem Elokeinu. That's what he says. It's a firm thing to say. Nobody was watching. He wasn't getting any benefit points from it. He was saying what he believed. He was a God-fearing person.
He was a good general.
What?
He was a good general.
And an excellent general. The question is then, why is David wanted dead? So we'll see in a second. But I want to show you what the Gemara does with this. Gemara has a lot of problems. Atzia liyoav dayane. They bring you up to a court case. Amalei my time a katle l'Avner. Why'd you kill Avner? If you remember, he killed Avner. David invited him down right after Avner said, I'm having nothing more to do with the kingdom. And he said, I got a word with you, Yoav, and he has a knife behind his back, he grabs him by the beard, he stabs him in the back, and kills him. Amalei, go Adam, Asael. Don't forget, I'm going to kill my brother Asael. That was when Asael was chasing him, and Avner said, get away from me, I'm going to have to kill you. And Asael kept chasing him, and he stabbed him right in the stomach with the back of his spear. So where says, wait, he's not going Adam, go Defaya. Avner was protecting himself. He was being chased. No. Avner should stab him in one of his arms. Could have taken him out without killing him. Amalei lo yachalei, couldn't do it. So the judges say he couldn't do it. He was on the run. What do you like? Think he could aim for his bicep, his leg? Amalei hashta b'dofen chamishi kivimei. Torah says he got him right between the fifth rib. He hit him just in the perfect spot. You told me that Avner couldn't hit he could hit a 100-yard target with a slingshot. You're telling me that he couldn't do what he was doing? Go back and forth, the Gemara says, Azulay. They let him off. Doesn't say he was Potter. Said they couldn't nail him. He was Mr. Slippery. He was the Teflon Don. They could not figure out whether they could nail this guy or not. The other case, by the way, is Amasa. Now, who is Amasa? Amasa was the general who was head of Absalom's rebellion. And then, when David comes back, he knows he's in trouble. Plus, he wants to get rid of that Yoav crazy guy anyway. So he says to Amasa, the general of Absalom, he says, listen, Absalom's dead, but I got a major rebellion. Now I'm back in Israel. Nobody knows if they want me. I want you to gather together our forces, and I want you to help me. He's reaching out to the enemy. I mean, it's like going to France and making, that's probably a debacle thing. What?
Why would they want to do that?
Why would David want to do it? Because sometimes you have to make friends with your enemies. Sometimes you have to reach out to people who are dangerous because the other alternative is worse. Why would Amasa? Because Absalom's dead. He supported the wrong horse. He bet on the wrong horse. Amasa's a great general, but he also knows David doesn't like Yoav. So Amasa knows, listen, I bet on the wrong horse, but I could still get a general job out of the whole thing. I'll just switch sides. It happens. People switch sides all the time. Takes him 3 days to gather together the forces, Amasa does, which is longer than David gave him. So Yoav goes and he kills him. The court case. He shouldn't have killed Amasa. No, he took 3 days. He took 3 days because he was learning Torah. No, he took 3 days because he was actually trying to stir up rebellion. Azulay. They let Yoav off. They couldn't decide whether Yoav was a murderer or not. But now Shlomo has him to rights. And I'll tell you why. Yoav thinks he's okay based on the Pasuk because he supported the Adoni Rahu rebellion, but he never supported the Absalom rebellion. But it works like this. If supporting an Adoniyahu rebellion is not a death penalty law because you're rebelling against the king, then Amasa is also not deserving of the death penalty. Amasa supported Absalom in the sake of his father, just like Adoniyahu was a king, as you mentioned. Even though when I take over the life of my king and the king doesn't give me the okay, is that more of a malchut, or since I was going to get it anyway? If I eat the pizza, if I eat the ice cream before dinner, I was going to eat it anyway. Is it a crime or is it not a crime? Absalom was certainly leading a rebellion. There's no doubt about it because he wanted to kill his father. Nonetheless, Absalom was the next oldest in line and he was going to be the next king. Yoav decides that his general, the army, Amasa, is supporting a full-fledged rebellion and therefore he murders him. And I'm not guilty. I didn't murder an innocent guy. I murdered a rebellious guy. Shlomo goes like this. Shlomo goes like this. You're saying that you killed Amasa because he deserved the death penalty law? So either way, you lose because you supported Adoniyahu. So if Adoniyahu was leading a full-fledged rebellion, then you were supporting him. And that means just like you killed Amasa, you have to die yourself. And if Adoniyahu is not leading a full-fledged rebellion, because he's the next in line, then you can't call Absalom a full-fledged rebellion also, in which case Amasa was innocent, in which case Yoav is now guilty not of rebellion, but he's guilty of murder. Either way you lose. It's beautiful, isn't it? It's a beautiful court case. I can't prove this, but it certainly strikes me as right based on the Gemara. He's dead in the water either way. His murder of Amasa is the clicker. And Avner as well. If you're saying that they're rebellious, then you're too also rebellious, and therefore you're guilty of rebellion, you die. And if they weren't rebellious, you killed an innocent man, you're dead. And now he's got him either way. Because of the Adoniyahu rebellion, which matches Absalom's rebellion, in Yoav's eyes it didn't match at all. And Shlomo says, no, same game. Got the same brother, oldest brother, who wants the kingship. Either you support him and he's rebellious, or support him, he's not rebellious, but either way, you're either a rebel and you die, or you're a murderer and die. I couldn't care either way because you're dead. He doesn't see that. Yoav clearly doesn't see that. Yoav clearly thinks he's just going against the whim of the king, and he runs away to the Malchut. So either you say that Shlomo killed him when he shouldn't have, which I think is very difficult to say, or you have to say that Shlomo had a justification to calling him worthy of being dead, even where David didn't. Now the question is, why didn't David kill him? Because again, David didn't have spot on rights. Because it could have been that Amasa was rebelling, and it could have been that Avner was rebelling. He didn't, or it could have been that Avner deserved to die because Avner killed Yoav's brother. He couldn't get him in a court case. That's what the Gemara is trying to say. But once the Adoniyahu rebellion comes up and he supports him, now I got a watertight case. Now I can bring him to court and get him killed. And that's what Yoav didn't understand. But Shlomo, who's a legal genius, knows, and therefore Yoav is dead to rights. And therefore Shlomo was able to do after the Adoniyahu rebellion what David probably dreamed of many times, but was never able to take place because he didn't have the legal background to do so. And therefore that's why Yoav dies. And Yoav dies because he was guilty one way or the other. Adoniyahu dies in the end because he rebelled against the king. And Adoniyahu lives the first time because in that case, that was only a question that maybe the king felt he deserved to die to save his own throne, but not really because he had done anything worthy of death penalty. And that's essentially how the whole section works out.
But even if he was, he deserved to die either way, how come the Mizbeach didn't protect him?
Because that's the Rambam. The Rambam says it only protects somebody who's against a Horat Shah or a Din Malchut. But Merid Din Malchut is not a Din Malchut. Merid Din Malchut is a Din Torah that you're not allowed to go to get a king. A Din Malchut is, I don't want you to wear blue on Tuesday, you wear blue on Tuesday. The king does have the right to take you out. But that, you have protection. But for a full-scale rebellion, no protection whatsoever. And therefore, he kills him. Not only does he not take him off the thing, he kills him right on the Mizbeach. Perhaps, the truth is, he obviously wanted to take him off the Mizbeach because Benayahu was very upset that he couldn't grab him off the Mizbeach. So he said, fine, listen, you're going to play that game, fine, you're dead anyway. I want you to take him off the Mizbeach because that's what the Pasuk says. But don't think that gives you protection. And that's essentially where he winds up, and Yoav is ultimately a dead man. So that's the total. Okay, so next week, I'll send out anybody who wants to be on the list. So send me an email to ericlevy@ericlevy.com, and then I'll email you out personally whether there will be a shiur next week. If I'm not mistaken, there's no shiur next week because Rabbi Schechter is coming to speak. But God willing, the next week we will be back in business. Have a good night. Lila Tov.